In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Betches Media presents.
Madam Speaker. Madam Vice President.
You want to hang out with us? You get your vaccine.
And so I went to Human Resources.
There's some things I just can't tell you on air.
The Betches Sup Podcast.
A woman's problem, if you will.
Hello, I'm Millie Tamaras.
I'm Amanda Duberman, and welcome to Betches Sup Podcast, where the C-SPAN meets the group chat for everything in between.
Oh my God, what a start. We have to keep that. I was distracted, obviously, because you have a visitor.
I have a cat.
Mason is with us today.
Mason. Yeah, Mason's here, and he's ready.
I mean, it is a no bones day. Do you know, does that mean anything to you, Millie?
Can I tell you something, Amanda? I worked with Jonathan Graziano at VaynerMedia many, many moons ago. And we've been following each other ever since on all the platforms. And then, yeah, he follows me on Twitter, whatever. And I was on TikTok the other day and I saw a no bones day thing. And I'm like, what the hell is happening? And then somebody had tagged him because he was on Good Morning America. And I'm like, I had no idea about any of this.
I know. It's amazing. He's been doing this for a while and he's had a pretty good following. But I'm not sure what it was about this week. It just popped off. And now he's got like 3 million followers.
It's crazy. But, you know, I remember he left Vayner to go work. I think he went to go write copy for Chewy or for something. Mm. Like, he's always been into pets, so this makes sense.
Oh, that's so nice. He, like, posted yesterday that, like, he's selling merch, but, you know, whenever there's, like, a viral trend, of course, Etsy sellers pop up, and, you know, that's great, small business. But he was like, that's fine, but please donate a little bit to animal shelters. So I'm glad that he's, like, if it sounds like he and Noodle deserve the success.
Yeah, and, like, God, I could not happen to a better person. I mean, he's so nice, but it's also like, you know, the agency we worked at was social media agency. Yeah. So he's on it. He knows.
Yeah, that's
strategy
true.
Strategy wise, like
he's taken the Gary V playbook, which I personally hate, but
yeah.
And if you have no idea what we're talking about, oh my God, if you have no idea what we're talking about, you
I shouldn't even have mentioned the name so I could
I
actively talk shit.
Well, good to know that if we ever want Bones's or Noodle's dad on the sup, we have a connection.
We do.
Hopefully he doesn't get canceled, but
he
seems
won't.
Like, what if Noodle got canceled? Noodle is like
Noodle
a
has transphobic comedy material.
Totally. If you don't know what we're talking about, you probably do, but there's just a pug on TikTok where every day he will either stand up in the morning or just collapse back down. And that is like basically a new form of TikTok astrology. I am actually trying to make Morty go viral through Bones Talk. So I tried yesterday when it was a Bones Day and it didn't do as well, but I'm going to try to do a no bones day compilation of Morty just sleeping. And I think it'll pop off.
I feel like you could just take the footage of Morty while you're doing the podcast of Morty laying out of your bed and yawning. And you're like,
yes, that's
we
what
need
I did.
To fight for abortion rights. And then just like, and laying out in the sun.
I agree. I mean, he's got his balls chopped off, so he knows he's not getting anyone pregnant.
Oh, Morty.
Ugh, it is a bones day. And also, I don't know why, I was just feeling sentimental today, and I wanted to thank our listeners. It is, you know, nearly the end of the year, even though, I mean, I feel like once we get to November, things just catapult. And it's been such a, like, unusual year in the news and politics space. And we've had to adapt to this, like, post-Trump world and what people are interested in and what your appetites are and what we don't want to hear about anymore. And we totally get that there are some things we just don't need to hear about every day. And I'm so appreciative of like all the feedback we've gotten that has let us broaden out our subject matter, and so appreciative of everyone who has stuck with us every day. It is the daily listeners that keep us going, and we've been able to keep our amazing sponsors and add some more. And you'd have no idea how much it helps us just to click play on this podcast every day. So, Thank you very much. And of course, it's been our best year yet because we had Miss Millie Tamaras.
Oh, thank you. That's so sweet. I mean, it's true with the listeners. Like, everyone is so nice. I've done other things where people aren't nice or like, but everyone is just so, and I feel like the times that I've been the most vulnerable have gotten so much response, and like, I really appreciate the listeners, like just a good group of people. And I wish everyone so much success, and you know, and like all the listeners,
come see us all on November 4th at Union Hall.
Oh yeah, yeah, and then yeah, for November 4th at Union Hall, please go see us. But also, yeah, I think you know, me and Elise are going to be starting our own show together, so that'll be fun. And yeah,
so exciting, awesome. I'm going to see if Brian is actually a social media star, so he should come too. And people, he has actual fans.
Oh, wow.
That like stop him on the street.
Oh my God.
Also, I mean, we're just going to keep talking about Millie because it's Latina Equal Pay Day.
Yes, Latina Equal Pay Day.
We've been hitting you guys with so much Hispanic Heritage Month, and it's not going to stop here because this week, today is Latina Equal Pay Day.
Well, I kind of want to say that to me, it kind of feels like online, like because it's Hispanic Heritage Month is like half of 2 months. Like, right. It just doesn't feel like a whole month, or it doesn't feel like a lot of people care. And then like halfway through, it became Bi Visibility Day, which my friend jokes like Bi Visibility Day is every week. And like my friend who is bi, then it became like, I'm just seeing all these like days and months, like, wow. Then it's like, yeah, so it's just like
October's a lot.
October
is stacked.
Like, damn, we can't get a month.
I know. And then you think about like Black History Month is February, which sometimes is 28 days.
Oh, I would say most of the time.
Well, that's true. Most every, fair enough.
4 out of 5 times, it's 48 days. But yeah.
But you know what, Millie? You are finally last intersection of your identity. We do get a full month, a full pure month for Women's History Month.
Yes, yes, Women's History. Yes, Women's History, but Women's History is 31 days. But, you know, according to Margaret Atwood, why can't we say woman?
I forgot about that. I guess I should have added that to our Dave Chappelle segment. Good
well,
God.
We
I
will. Mean,
we will. We'll get to say, it.
But Amanda, do you want to share why today is Equal Pay Day, even though originally Equal Pay Day, like,
yeah, definitely. There's a lot of, right. There's a number of equal pay days. Today is specifically a Latina Equal Pay Day, which marks the date into the new year that it would take for a Latina woman to earn as much as a non-Hispanic white man did last year. That means Latina women have to work 22 months to earn as much as a non-Hispanic white man did in 1 year. Like Millie said, there are multiple equal pay days throughout the year. They're sort of like and they mark, you know, on average how far women have to work. I think the average one for all women, which is heavily weighted towards white women, is in April. For Asian and Pacific Islander women, it's in March. For Black women, I believe it's September 8th. I think there's another one for queer women that mark how far you have to work. And this is the last one. This is the last one. Actually, I was mistaken. I think for Indigenous women, it's in September. And for Black women, it's in August. And so this is delayed by quite a while because Latina women earn about 53 to 57 cents to the white man's dollar. That's half. They are the most poorly paid of all women, as I said, and the pay disparity is exacerbated by a number of things. I mean, Latina women, it's such a large group of people, but things that apply are racial discrimination, sexism, xenophobia, and poor labor rights and protections in a lot of the fields dominated by Latina women, such as like domestic jobs and care work. These fields were also disproportionately impacted at the start of the pandemic. Early in the pandemic, Latinas experienced the highest unemployment rate of all demographic groups. When you think about, you know, some of these things we're hearing about, so many women having to stay home, that includes so many Latina women, but it also leaves a lot of childcare centers are run by Latina women, and those have suffered in the post-pandemic era as well. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about your background with this, Millie, because your mom owned a small business, right? So do you feel like she was impacted by this pay discrimination? Do you think that owning her own business kind of helped her avoid some of it? How did it factor in as you were kind of like watching your mom's work life?
I think it's interesting. Yeah, that's a good point. Like a lot of my mom's clientele were women, majority Black women, Black and Hispanic women. So And, you know, it's a lot of nurses, a lot of, like, teachers. That's how I grew up. You know what I mean? So, like,
yeah.
It's not, although there's, like, probably pay disparity, you know, my mom's, like, able to earn whatever, like, not have pay disparity. It is challenging because there's only so much that you can charge, you know, middle class or lower middle class women, you know, and there's only so much that, yeah, exactly. And you want to give quality service, but you have to pay rent, but you have to like keep prices affordable for your clientele. And like a good client, you know, because it's like a, you know, we would do Dominican style, which is blow dry and whatever. They would come weekly or bi-weekly. So it has to be something where it has to be a price point where like a teacher can afford to come every week or every 2 months or something like that. So, yeah, I certainly think about that a lot. And, you know, even though my mom has like some kind of power and whatever, like she still has to charge. Like when I tell her what I pay for a haircut here versus like what she, you know, it's just not comparable.
Totally. I mean, I'm sure that's the case with so many childcare providers as well. It's like, I mean, that's why so many have closed. It's like you need the clients, but people, I mean, childcare is so obviously it has to be expensive. I mean, it should be expensive to leave a child in somebody else's expert care for a long period of time, but we have no like guarantees. So many childcare places have closed just because they're like, I can only raise my rate so much until people can't come anymore.
I mean, that's like a huge problem with like small businesses. I would say though, like somebody on Twitter brought up the point of like, childcare is so expensive, but the workers are paid so little.
They're still paid.
So where is the money going? And it's because a lot of childcare places, I mean, especially the ones probably still open, are owned by like big, powerful CEOs that hoard the money. I mean, best example is Betsy DeVos owning KinderCare. But so there's that. And yeah, I just think about, I mean, I think that the payday thing is such an effective way of showing like this issue because it is just like equal pay days one day, Black woman pay day, Asian pay, like it is just the best way to exemplify like people can't fathom like what is two times every dollar whatever mean.
Yeah, good point. Yeah.
And it's so funny because one of my aunts, I remember a few years ago sharing like, yeah, you know, today's equal pay day for Black women or whatever. And then she's like, well, I'm Afro-Latina, so can I combine both Black women and Latina pay day? And I'm like, no, you can't. Like, that's
I know. I was thinking, I was like, should I put Millie and Elise's like cash apps on the Instagram today?
I mean, if you want. My cash app, my Venmo is always available. But it's not even that. Yeah, it's more just like.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, it is true of the labor that's undervalued. And I mean, I think. You know, it's so funny because on one end, like women and like the work that Latina women and even like Latinos in general gets undervalued. And that's crazy. But I definitely, you could see like how much people were suffering without daycare, a nanny, a landscaper, house cleaner, like during the pandemic. A woman had to close her fucking business. Did you remember that one article about the man who like had to be a house husband for half a week and made his wife close down her business because he couldn't do it?
Yeah.
So like that is also just an important thing. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like, I mean, imagine being in these fields and you're helping families and you're helping children. It's like, when you own a business and you're providing certain goods and services and you're like, I don't know, like whoever, people that are like, you're more willing to reduce your rates. And then because these are people, you know, they're people in your community, they have no other option. And like over time that ends up being that you can't sustain yourself. Yeah. I agree. It's really effective, especially the idea of like 22 months, like I could, like men could have stopped work, wouldn't have to work for 11 months almost.
Yeah.
To earn as much as a Latina woman. It's almost half as much. Something so striking to me whenever this comes up is like, I think they said on average, a Latina woman earns about 36. I don't want to say earn because she's obviously earning more. A Latina woman brings in about $36,000 a year and your average non-Hispanic white man brings in $67,000. Yeah. That's also not great. Americans are poor.
Americans are poor. Americans are poor. And I mean, I think like, again, there is this idea that if you're poor, it's because you're bad or lazy. And, you know, I'm gonna die. Like making sure that people know that it is not an indictment. Your wealth level has not an indictment of like how good of a person you are or how hard you work, because every day we're finding out more and more that that's just not true. And back to, you know, the whole point of like the Great Resignation and Striketober and all of that is like people are working really hard and they're not seeing it. And then the people, just so somebody can have a fucking yacht in Lake Michigan. Jesus Christ.
Exactly. Have you ever found out in a job experience, like explicitly found out that a white man was earning more than you for the same work?
Yes. I was working somewhere. I had worked I was new in my career and I worked somewhere. I had a year and a half job experience or 2 years, you know, working for a professional. And then I got offered this job. I wanted 40,000. They offered me 36, which, you know, I was 24, 25 at the time. And
where were you living?
In New York.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I know. And they're like, well, you're new, this and that. They said all these excuses to talk me down. And I, you know, I didn't have enough work experience to be like, no, fuck you. It was so funny because I had just, I was interviewing to be a receptionist at Vice, before that. And they wanted me to quit the job I was working at without giving notice, like to start the next day. And I'm like, I don't know. And they were offering me 30,000. So I was like, to be a receptionist. And I was like, no, I can't. And then they gave the job to someone else. So, so then, anyway, I got 36. And then after they, admittedly to their whatever, they saw how efficient I was, how smart I was. They had all these assumptions about who I was and the kind of work I was going to do. And when I started and I exceeded those expectations, they bumped my pay up $3,000 a year, which is how much a fucking month, like another $100 or whatever. But and they whatever. And they made a big stink about it. But then one of my coworkers, who was this gay white man, you know, but he was 2 years younger than me and just got on the job market. I don't think he ever had professional experience. Maybe he had an unpaid internship, but because, you know, he did the unpaid internship because his parents had money.
Exactly. Yeah.
He showed me one of his letters or something and it showed that he was making 41, off bat. And
that's so crazy that you also have the context of within a short period of time, they were like, oh, actually you're better than the way we stereotyped you. Exactly. So sure. That must have really stung.
I think at the time I was so excited. I was yeah. I know. You know, at the time I was an idiot. But I
remember when over 40 was oh my God, I'm making it.
Yeah, exactly. No, exactly. And then also at the time when I was subjected to a lot of harassment and toxicity at that job or whatever. And it was just exemplified. It's a long story, but it was exemplified of I quit. They wrote me up one time for something. My boss yelled at me and I ran out of a business lunch and they wrote me up for embarrassing him. But at that moment I got a job offer that was $11,000 more. I got a job offer that was $50,000 a year.
Yeah.
And
is that when you left the meeting?
Well, I was just I'm not signing this thing. I quit. I'm giving 2 weeks notice. I can't work here anymore. It's not working out. Which was a badass move. But they gave me a bonus. They gave me $3,000 when I quit, basically being don't sue us. We know we treated you poorly.
Oh, that's crazy.
But yeah, exactly. That was, but you know, that's something where now if that happened, well, I don't know. Actually,
let me take that back. No, totally. I mean, I feel like in the past couple years or so, there's been a lot more pay transparency. But when I've noticed it, it tends to still be among women. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I worked at HuffPost, we did, and this was, everybody knew that we were doing this, but there came a time where all of the women in the office, it maybe wasn't all of them, but it was most of us. We're like, we need to just, this is the only way. And we all just put in a spreadsheet what we all made by name. And it was very obvious that there were discrepancies that were not based on anything, that were not based on experience, just based on clearly when people got hired, they thought they would accept a lower rate. All right, now we have to touch again on Dave Chappelle's transphobia, because he's still doing it. He has not apologized, and there have been some developments. So as we talked about last week, Chappelle was calling cancel culture while the Netflix CEO was publicly defending the decision to keep the special up. He said something insane. This man, Netflix co-CEO Ted Sarandos, said that they were going to keep the special up because, quote, while some employees disagree, we have a strong belief that content on screen doesn't directly translate to real world harm, which is just the most insane. He said that. Like, did a communications professional read that?
No.
Or do you think he just sent that?
He just sent it. I mean, this is the, you know, like 13 Reasons Why is a, you know, was the key example of, like, first of all, like, that show fucking with is terrible. And I watched some of it, and it was literally like a fantasy. It was really romanticizing suicide. And like, you know, just like, yeah, everyone's going to feel bad when I'm dead. You know what I mean? And like, just terrible. And it did increase teen suicide rates. And I feel like, I mean, just in terms of like in the comedy scene, you know, I've had some talks with friends and they're like, I feel like a certain kind of comedian is emboldened to do more transphobic material, you know? Because people replicate. That's just something that you see. Like, people replicate who, and their comedy is like who they want to be, whose career they want. So, you know, if anybody's popular at a given moment, you go to open mics, you go to shows, like, there's gonna be 20 little versions of that person. And right now, like, a bunch of people are, you know, trying to think that transphobic material is okay. And it's just sad because, you know, content does have a big impact on, you know, and it is just the way that it humanizes people. And like, I just think about something like Pose. Like,
right.
Like, I was getting my hair done, but, you know, I would get my hair done by this woman who like lived in a project in Flushing and like probably has no exposure to that community. And she's very religious and all that stuff. And she's like, wow, I didn't know, you know, she was saying things that are like, on surface, like a little ignorant, but she's like, I didn't know that they like did that, or they try, you know, they like are so feminine, you know, all these things. But it was like, because she got to see this show, she was exposed to this reality and was able to like humanize and have compassion for them. So it's like, you know, and
right,
like, that's the power of media.
Right. Exactly. Like, then I want Ted's, he did take this back, but then it's like, okay, then say that media can't be used for good. You can't say that. If you're gonna, I mean, I'm sure your like main line is that Netflix improves people's lives and helps us, and like entertainment helps us all connect to each other, but it can also help us like pull each other apart.
Well, I mean, right. It's like that same argument of like comedians are modern day philosophers, or it's just joke. It's just jokes and everyone should calm down. And it's like, well, which one is it? Are we modern philosophers, and what are we doing is like pontificating and like whatever, and like pushing things to the edge? Or is it just jokes, and should we all lighten up and like,
totally,
it's not that serious? And I think the funniest tweet I read was like, it's not comedians' job to push the edge. It's comedians' job to sell drinks to drunk people.
Oh, I love that.
On a weekday night when the bar is slow. And it's like, kind of like both, you know, I kind of see both, but yeah, exactly. It's just like, you can't have it either way. And then it's just like, okay, like, you know, is it that, you know, cancel culture is bad or something like that? Whatever the fucking point is, or that like, people are allowed and entitled to be like, this sucks. And,
right.
And a lot of people, and I think the confusion is that like, people are like, ah, I can't believe Netflix, like Snowflake employees are walking out of work because of a comedy special. And it's just like, no, they're not. Their boss said things that were offensive, and they're responding to that. And they have, and in their list of demands, it's not take the Chappelle thing down. It's put a warning, just like you did with 13 Reasons Why, saying that a lot of this shit is harmful. And also, like, make a commitment to elevate more trans people in your content.
Right, exactly. Because that's, and I think that's such an important part of the demand, is because, like, if you just have a trans person, or, I mean, even just somebody sensitive to these issues, but why not just a trans person on your board, you're not even, like, getting to this point. You're not mm-hmm. even having to, like, deal with these. And I think you were mentioning somebody who was, like, saying sort of vaguely ignorant things. And I think a lot of us have maybe family members that are, like, mm-hmm. new to this. And I think there are a lot of people, millions or tens of millions of people, who are not super comfortable. They don't try hard enough with pronouns. They still feel a little defiant about it. Like, why is everybody switching gender? And these aren't people that are outwardly hateful, but they just sort of don't really bother with it in their own homes or their own lives or privately. And Dave Chappelle is validating them.
Of course.
And he's giving, it's not just the transphobes. It's like everybody's grandpa who's like, is it a she? Is it a shim? Is it a nit? Like saying really bad things that they think are funny that maybe you let them get away with because they're going to die soon. But like it's reinforced. There's so, people are, you know, there's straight up transphobes. I mean, the average age of a Black trans woman is what, like 36 or something?
Terrible.
And then you say that that's okay. I mean, I loved that Ashley Marie Preston, who's like a huge trans advocate, and she was in Disclosure, mm-hmm. which was explicitly about like Hollywood and trans identity. And she went to this and spoke out because she was like, I know these employees can't. Like, I know they have a lot to lose. And only I read in the New York Times that only dozens of employees walked out. To be fair, they are still mostly remote. And apparently there was like a virtual walkout where they like closed their computers. But there was also like supporters and activists. But then I also saw like it was phrased as Dave Chappelle's supporters, which just reminded me as if they were like Trump supporters. I was like, I hate this clash that there's like, it's now a new like cultural identity to be a Dave Chappelle supporter.
And it's so, I mean, I think that you acknowledge like the rates of Black trans women, but I think that that's a huge criticism that Dave Chappelle is getting from a lot of queer Black people, is that like, you know, he's, the way that he makes it sound is like, you know, either you're gay or you're Black, and gay people getting rights is faster than Black rights. And then it's just completely, you know, like said earlier, like losing the intersection of like, there are many people in the intersection of being queer and Black, and they're the ones that are getting the things the worst. And I think that like intersectionality is an important part of any kind of activism. And like, you can't say things about Black whatever and then not acknowledge that Black gay people have what, and just as a, you know, as a comedy fan, like, you know, as somebody who grew up watching Dave Chappelle, it's really disappointing and saddening to see that, like, and I mean, that is also something Saeed Jones had a really great article about, in GQ reviewing the comedy special about like how it feels like you've been stabbed in the back, but then, you know, so the person who stabbed you is like, stop bleeding. Why are you bleeding? And it's the same thing of like, you know, as a Black gay man, he grew up, and I feel the same way of like growing up really admiring all the things that Dave Chappelle has done to mm-hmm. advance the race conversation and like satirize how ridiculous it is. But also like seeing how where he's at now is just like a kind of betrayal, and it's hurtful. And yeah, there's like, there's that. And then also, you know, I mean, I don't want to say too much about Netflix because, you know, I like freelance with Netflix sometimes. But I mean, just the reality,
that's also part of the problem.
I mean,
that Netflix buys ads with everybody. And
well, the thing is, too, is that like a lot of their queer, you know, a lot of queer employees, like just like I worked in the Latinx vertical, like the Latinx vertical, freelanced for it, like a lot, everyone, San Diego, New York, Philly, but you know, so I imagine that that's what's with the queer vertical, which their queer vertical is really cool. Like they do amazing content,
been speaking out, they've been trying to like use, I mean, honestly, this sounds dumb, but like, I mean, they did yesterday tweet from the Herald like BRB walking out. That's pretty bold. I gotta say, that's pretty bold. So they definitely feel safe, and I do think they are safe. I think the CEO knows he really fucked up, and that the employees have, I mean, they've always had the moral high ground, but I'm glad to see that these people, like, they definitely have the leverage right now to make these demands. But yeah, it is so, like, I mean, like, I was looking on Twitter, looking at mentions of Dave Chappelle, and it's like, when you're getting rave reviews from the National Review, like, is that what you want? Like,
yeah, these guys don't.
He doesn't care.
It's the same thing with like Kyrie Irving and all these like idiots. Like, yeah. It's just like it's becoming reactionary, you know. And that is another thing Roxane Gay said in her review of the thing. It's just like Dave Chappelle walked away from doing the Chappelle Show because he saw like a bunch of white people. I mean, that is like the anecdote of the time was like he saw a bunch, you know, he's doing satire about his community and he saw a bunch of white people joking and like promoting these harmful stereotypes. And it made him very uncomfortable because he's like, this is not who these jokes are intended for, and they're doing it in bad faith, and it makes me uncomfortable as an artist, and I have to stop. So it's really interesting to see 15 years later or something, or 10 years later, that like those same people that made him so uncomfortable, he turned down money, are now revering him and think he's like a genius and all this stuff. And a lot of people in his community are like, this is disappointing, and he's just doubling down on it, you know? And it's just like, there just is a point where, you know, people just become so rich, they're completely out of touch.
Yeah, but Netflix did have the power here to say, like, no, that content's not. I mean, I wonder what the behind, because I heard, I think Elise mentioned this, that like 38 of the 72 minutes are dedicated to transphobia. That's what I didn't realize until this week, that this special seems like it was designed to, in his view, to address accusations of transphobia, in which all he did was double down. It's not just like he just sort of gestured at it and made a joke and they won't take it out. It's like the special exists in a sense for him to defend this.
Yeah.
Have you watched it? I haven't watched it.
No, I haven't watched it. I'm okay.
I think Elise, I think she said she did and she's confirmed all the.
Well, I read enough reviews and like, exactly. I mean, I think a lot of people are like, you have to watch it to get an opinion. And I feel like I don't like,
I don't think that's,
I accurate. Feel like, I don't think that's accurate. And then also like,
listen to the people affected. If trans people say it's transphobic, it's transphobic. But did you see Michelle Wolf's response to it? She had an amazing statement and she wrote a lot of things. But one of them was that like, I think he invoked her name in saying like, we have a lot of diversity here. And she was like, don't you dare.
Yeah.
Don't do that. And basically like insulted him a lot and then said a lot of hardcore things and then not even insults. They were just strongly worded things. And then she ended it saying, but you can't say I crossed the line because it doesn't exist. Right. And then Michelle Wolf replied like, you're right. Exactly. There is no line. It's like, oh no.
Well, not surprising at all. But I think what I liked about Hannah Gatsby's response was that she's like, you don't pay me enough to be this token. And like, I already am getting harassed by every time you pay Dave Chappelle $20 million to outwardly process all of his emotionally stunted views. I really like that thing.
It's so funny.
I think it was funny, but it's also just like, yeah, like,
that's exactly
what it is. It is like, like you said, the special seems to exist but it is like processing outwardly these things, because his life experience now is, you know, it's not like, oh, I went to the store, yeah. I can't catch a cab because I'm black, like stuff that, like, that's not his reality, you know, not to say that he's not facing racial discrimination, but it's also like, His reality is just, you know, oh, the Twitter trolls are like, oh, Viacom put Dave Chappelle on HBO Max and didn't pay me. So, like, let's all protest that. You know, those are his realities and his battles. And, like, yeah, it's just, like, interesting because it's, like, going back and forth on is Twitter's a thing, everyone's talking shit versus, like, I can't believe Twitter people don't like me and like doubling down. And it's just like, it's this whole idea of like, that I feel that I keep going back to. It's just like, men want to do whatever they want and not have any consequences. And it's just like, yeah, if you say things that offend some people, just, it's okay if people don't fuck with you. Like, that's not
exactly,
it's not like right. It's not your right to like have fans that, you know what I mean? Like,
right. Like, as you, like, she pointed out, some people are talented enough where they deserve $20 million to just talk freely for an hour. Mm-hmm. I count Hannah Gadsby among them, of course, Millie Tamaras, all of our, at least all of them. But like, then the least, you can't even be bothered to not be hateful during that. Like, come on. Yeah, you're right. It's like, everybody is subject to norms and standards and guidelines. And it's like, and a lot of them are inappropriate. I mean, thinking of like how many boundaries women can't cross all the time. And this man is given millions and billions of dollars to be hateful. I'm curious to see how this plays out, but it does seem, I'm glad to have seen this like apology, but it's hard because nobody's going to stop watching Netflix. They're probably, I mean, does he have an ongoing deal with them?
I feel like this might have been his last deal, but don't quote me on that. But yeah, I think like the final thing, or I guess my point is that like, first of all, as a comedian, I view comedy as an art. I view comedy as a profession. I view comedy as an industry, which, you know, it's not just, I think a lot of it goes bad when people are like, oh yeah, it's just jokes. And it's like, no, this is a business and people work really hard on it and it's not just whatever. But it's also just like, if you view it as a profession, you know, just like there are lawyers who have to recertify, you can, you know, recertify every year, like with updated laws. And just like there are doctors who are constantly have to be like knowing what the medicine is, like the clinical trials and what works for their patients and all that stuff. I think that the same, personally, I feel like the same goes for comedy. You know, things are changing. And if you're in this, this industry and you want to be on the cutting edge, you have to know what the conversation is like. And you have to know like how people are talking and all that stuff. And if you don't, that's fine. But like, there are people who are comfortable going into a lawyer who hasn't like recertified in years and whatever. You know what I mean?
Like Rudy Giuliani.
Exactly. But like, if you're wanting somebody who's like giving you like the most cutting edge shit, you're not going to go to that person. You're going to go to, you know what I mean? So like, that's kind of how I feel of like, but I think that these guys were at the cutting edge for so long. And then they've got like Jerry Seinfeld's another example.
Yeah. He has said straight out like, no, I'm not going to catch up to the times.
Exactly. And that's fine. Stay right here. Out of the way. But I feel like they won't catch up with the times. They won't catch up to the times. They won't do the research. They won't have the dialogues. They won't do anything. But they also don't, they're also mad at everyone who is. And then also saying that if you do catch up with the times, you're an idiot. And it's just like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. Men must be nice. Anyway, that is our show for today. Thank you, Millie and Mason.
Mason. Thank you, Amanda Duberman.
Until the end of democracy, I'm Amanda Duberman.
And I'm Millie Tamaras. Thank you.
And this is the Better Stuff Podcast. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Betches Sup podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Jorge Morales Pico, and Sean Kilby. Editing by Jorge Morales Pico. Social media by Amanda Duberman. Be sure to follow @Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails to suppod@betches.com. Betches.